All right. So thanks to Javi yesterday, we had the shortest presentation ever. And so today I would like to propose the longest presentation ever. When I rehearsed my presentation yesterday evening, it took me an hour to go through all the slides. So if I'm going to stop after 30 minutes, somebody, I guess, will have to kill me. Okay. So any volunteers? You maybe. But warning, I have a laser sight. Okay, so the idea of establishing a set of coding, nice coding rules for LaTeX is something that I've been floating around in a corner of my head for some time now, and I would like to share those ideas with you today. So a bit of history first. In 1918, there was a book published by the name of The Elements of Style, a book written by William Strunk and friends, which was at the time a style guide for writing American English. So that's not a programming language, but that's actually a natural language, although maybe the English people would say that it's an unnatural language, but I'll leave that to you. What's interesting with this book is that it was maybe the first book about a style in general, and also what was interesting was that this book was extremely controversial since its very first publication. Some people actually loved it, some people hated it, people accused the author of being extremely condescending and having only a partial view of what proper American language actually should be, and things like that. So this is interesting for us because it shows that talking about coding style in general is probably a subject, is a very controversial issue, okay, because an important part in a coding style is probably a matter of personal taste. Okay. There was another book subsequently to this one, published in 1974, which is called The Elements of Programming Style by Kernighan and Friends, and this is probably the first book about coding style for programming languages. Okay. This book has been a source of inspiration for many other books afterwards, and today we have an amazing number of books entitled The Elements of Whatever Programming Language You Choose Style. Okay, so interestingly enough, there is no such thing for LaTeX, right? So if you look at what coding style means for people, including these books or over the internet and stuff, what you will find are definitions like a coding style is supposed to help people read and understand code. Okay, so readability, understanding is a key factor. Something also very important is that a coding style should help you read and understand code that you wrote yourself, but also that other people wrote. Okay, and that's something very important as well. You need to understand code that you're not the author of. If you look at the introductory paragraph in the GNU coding standards, you will find this interesting keywords in it. The purpose of the GNU coding standards are to make the GNU system clean and consistent. Consistency is also something extremely important. Easy to install, we don't care. This document can also be read as a guide for writing portable, not very interesting, but robust and reliable programs. Okay, so those are important keywords in terms of coding style. So this is the coding style manifestos. If you take the point of view of the human being, readability is extremely important. The more readable a piece of program is, actually the more maintainable it is. If you take, on the other hand, the point of view of the machine, what's important is that a coding style will help you write more reliable and more robust code. So there is a subtle distinction between reliability and robustness. Reliability is when a program actually does what it's supposed to do. Okay? And robustness, on the contrary, means that a program is supposed to maybe gracefully, as gracefully as possible, handle unexpected situations. Okay, and finally, if you take the point of view of the, in some way, the man in the middle between the human and the machine, then what's interesting, well, for the GNU coding standards, it was portability, but I think in the LaTeX world, we don't care that much about portability because, you know, it's just a macro system, so it's almost like the JVM, for instance. But for us, what's more interesting is extensibility and intercession. So what I mean by that is that when people are interacting in the LaTeX world, most of the time, it's because you must handle conflicts between packages, so you have to redefine something that belongs to another package, but then it's going to conflict again with another thing, and then it's a nightmare. Okay, these are the things I was talking about last year, if you read the proceedings from last year or if you attended the conference in San Francisco. One small bit I would add is that, and probably because the personal taste is very important when establishing a coding style, I think that the exact coding style that you want to use is actually less important than actually sticking to it. And that's consistency, okay? So you want to use a coding style, fine, but then stick to it and use it all the time. Don't use several different coding styles at the same time in the same programs, okay? I think that's even more important than the actual coding style that you use. So how come we don't have a coding style for LaTeX? Okay, it's been 30 years, right? So I have three potential explanations for this. The first one is legacy. As it turns out, there is not really such a thing as a LaTeX programming manual. I mean, how to write a package for doing the things that you want to do, contrary to other programming languages. So in the LaTeX world, what people usually do is learn by example. You want to know how to write a style, you open a style which does something similar to what you want to do, and you look at how it's written, and you imitate how it's written. At least that's how I started to program in LaTeX, okay? Well, I see that some people disagree. We can talk about that later. So if you do that, you learn by example, but in fact, learning by example can mean learning by good example, and also learning by bad example. And there are bad styles in the LaTeX world on CTIN, okay? Please shut down the cameras. I'm not going to give you names, okay? But I'm one of them, because the code I wrote like 15 years ago, it's awful, okay? Since then, I had 15 years to think about a proper coding style to improve the quality of my own code, okay? So if you learn by example, you're not really thinking in terms of coding style, or more precisely, what you do is actually inherit the coding style from the examples that you saw. And this is not necessarily a good thing. The second reason why we don't have a coding style for LaTeX, I think, is the lack of help. First, LaTeX, as opposed to a real programming language with such paradigms as functional programming, object-oriented programming, declarative programming, logic programming, whatever you want, we don't have that. We only have macros which expand to text or other macros, okay? So this is not very structured. So the language does not impose any kind of proper coding style on you, contrary to general purpose languages. And the second thing also is that supporting LaTeX programming in a text editor is actually a complicated task, okay? I'm quite satisfied with OCTEC running in XEmax, but I mean, it's extremely complicated for this editor to get indentation right, for instance. Suppose that I want to indent the code which is inside mecat letter and mecat other. It doesn't know how to do that, maybe because I'm the only one who wants actually to do that, okay? So supporting a language which has very little structure is complicated for a text editor. So if you're lazy, you're just going to let the editor indent the things as he wants to do in a broken way, and you will just inherit that, okay? Probably a third reason is also the lack of actual need for a coding style in LaTeX. What I mean by that is that LaTeX mostly is a world of dwarfs, in the sense that this is a calculation that I did for my talk last year. If you look at the Tech Live 2009, for instance, the average size of a package is around 300 lines of code. So who the hell wants a coding style for maintaining 300 lines of code? Okay. Well, almost nobody. I do because I'm a maniac. But that's all, you know, it's for the fun of it, right? As opposed to a programming language in which you maintain millions of lines of code. The situation is different. And also, if you look at the most package in the LaTeX world, you will notice that most of them are actually single-authored. So if you don't have that interaction problem that different people need to understand each other, then probably establishing a coding style is not so relevant. Okay, so actually, When I claim that we don't have a coding style for LaTeX, this is actually not completely exact, because we have tools and a set of conventions that already exist. So for instance, we have packages that give you more abstraction. If then calc, yesterday I heard about record for the first time. It's awesome that we have packages like record, right? We also have the peculiar syntax of the percent character, which eats everything up to the next line, including white space, which is extremely helpful for proper indenting your code, okay, properly indenting your code. We also have a set of conventions like these ones, and there I must say that even LaTeX itself is not able to adhere to its own conventions. For instance, those two macro, I think this is mentioned in the companion. This one's not supposed to be used outside the kernel, but still it's called without an at character. And this one, on the contrary, should have been better called minus one instead of this weirdo here, okay? So this...
Inheritance of
DOM. Exactly, inheritance. That's what I was calling legacy on the previous slide. Okay, legacy is that kind of thing. There is good legacy and there is bad legacy. And also, if you look at the companion, there are some elements of style in it. For instance, there is a section which describes the structure of source files. There is also a section which describes the general structure of a package file. Okay, but if you count the pages, you can figure out that it covers approximately 1% of the book. So that's practically nothing. Okay. So why am I still convinced that, regardless of all that stuff, establishing a coding style for LaTeX is relevant? Well, for three reasons. First one, I would prefer people to learn by good example, as I said, instead of learning by any kind of example, including the bad ones. I think we also need to facilitate interaction, and actually as a corollary to that, maybe help by providing a proper set of programming practices, help cleaning up the current intersession mess that the LaTeX world is. Okay, and I have some ideas about that, which I'm using in my packages right now. So how can we do that? When I was thinking about coding styles, I came up with sort of four different levels at which it's interesting to think about good programming practices. So level one would be the low level, in which I'll be talking mostly about layout, formatting, indentation, naming schemes for your macros, stuff like that. Level two, the mid-level, deals with design, and this is where you address problems such as modularity, encapsulation, maybe the use of other programming paradigms within LaTeX code. Level three deals with behavior, that is, providing nice user interfaces, providing a good way of handling package conflicts, okay, so intersession. And finally, there is even a social meta level, which I call level four, in which I think in terms of human behavior, we have different things that we can say that explain the current intersession mess as well. So what I'm going to do right now is show you some of the rules that I'm using for my own packages. So I know they help me write better quality code. But again, by no means I mean that you should use them. Okay, so I'm going to use the imperative form because it's easier for me. But starting right now, feel completely free to disregard everything that I'm going to say. Okay, so let's start with level one. A couple of things are pretty obvious, and I think well admitted by everybody, so I'm going to go fast on those. The first thing I try to do is stay WYSIWYGLY coherent. What I mean by that is, you know, if you have a double backslash, it means go to next line. So in my source code, I'm going to next line. I'm not going to put stuff behind the backslash. In general, I try to indent properly any kind of tables, which can be a huge pain in the neck, but since I've told you I'm a maniac, so I can spend half an hour doing that just so that the code is nicely readable. Rule number two, put only one logical instruction per line. Logical instruction is not a single macro. Most of the time, you need a set of different macro calls to perform an actual instruction. Shall I say an atomic instruction? So for instance, begin environment or end environments are a logical block of code. Expand after foo bar is also a logical instruction to me. And maybe when you need to do some, well, okay, assume there are braces here. If you need to right it left some piece of text, then the whole text, assuming that it fits on one line, then this is a logical block. Okay, so you should use a single line for that, and not, I think it's bad to split instructions like those ones across several lines, provided that it fits on a single line, of course. Rule number three, be as spacey as you want in math mode. For some reason, I think people often forget that in math mode, the spaces are irrelevant. So you can take as much space as you want to write, you know, nicely readable equations. And I've often seen, mostly in code written by my students, for instance, math equations extremely compact with no space at all. And this, I find this difficult to read. Grouping, any kind of grouping should, for me, again, be subject to indentation. Personally, I'm using two spaces to indent code within grouping constructs. You can do whatever you like. So by grouping, I mean, you know, braces, begin group, end group, B group, E group, and even make at letter, make at other, which I consider to be a grouping construct. Okay, it helps me read the code. And obviously, my editor goes in the way. It doesn't help me doing that kind of things. Okay, most of the time I need to manually indent the first line in a group, and then the rest will follow. But this is something which is not completely satisfactory. Obviously, this is not even a rule. The person character is your friend. Okay. So, shut down the cameras. Okay, which version do you prefer? If somebody tells me this one, there is a hospital not far away from here. Have I went there yesterday? Okay, so obviously this is much more readable to me. Okay, that's an obvious example. Different situations I've seen a code about braces and indenting within braces. This one I sort of like it, but it's perhaps a bit too spacey for me. Something that I would prefer is this: when you have those two braces on a single line, it still nicely distinguishes the two blocks of code, you know, the opening code and the closing code. This is nice. This is not nice at all, because you can't make the difference between what's in the open environment section and what's in the closing environment section. Okay, and what I tend to do these days is using this compact form, but also put comments saying this is the beginning stuff and this is the ending stuff. I'm doing this mostly because it's also an opportunity to document in some way within the code itself the sort of the prototype of the environment or the macros and those kind of things. Sometimes, no rule without exception, right? And I'm more than willing to admit that sometimes I break my own rules. So this is a case where I'm sort of forced to break my own rule, which would be to put everything on a single line. In that case, if I don't close behind a comment character the opened square bracket, my editor will go, you know, south with problems with syntax analysis and also fontification. So because of that, I'm closing the bracket, that just because of a problem in the editor, but then I'm forced to go next line. Okay, so that's an exception to my own rule. Another exception which I use is to stay on the same line if an argument to a macro is empty. Okay. I don't like, for some reason, the fact of opening a brace and closing it on the subsequent line if there's nothing in it. So these are exceptions. I told you that I'm an indentation maniac, okay? So that is exactly why my wife is loving me so much. Of course, I am just kidding. This macro is interesting because, as you can see, it opens a group here, but this macro is in fact implemented in terms of two different sub-macros, and those two sub-macros are in charge of closing the group that's been open in the original one. So what I'm doing in these cases is try to keep a consistent indentation across all the macros together, because visually it gives you a clue where the group opens when the group closes. Okay, and I find this quite readable. Names. Okay, some rules. That was for indentation and general layout. So names. Rule number one, use prefixes. Okay, avoid name clashes. So one spectacular clash I have with my curriculum vitae class, which is called Curve, is the existence of a text macro. Because CUnitX also has one. Okay. And yes, and there are others. So that's a shame. Okay, what the hell was I thinking defining a backslash text macro? You know, it's obviously too general. So you shouldn't do that. I think using a prefix for your package is completely mandatory for styles. Maybe not so much for classes, because classes define global stuff. So in Curve, it's a pity that I have a backslash text macro, but I have rubrics. So I have a rubric macro, and it would be, I think, extremely cumbersome that every macro in the Curve class would be called Curve something. Okay. So in those cases, I tend to be a bit more laxist about this convention of using a prefix. And also, like I said, once you have a prefix, please stick to it. Don't use different prefixes in your package. As I did in the Fink package, I recently discovered that I have a Fink deer macro and also an FNK at main deer something. This is going to be tough. Rule number two, use postfixes as well. In some situations, I find that postfixes are nice. For instance, when you create a box, my convention is to call the box blah 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 box, because it might otherwise conflict with another macro of the same name, which I would like to define at some point. Okay, but sometimes this rule does not apply, because there are cases, for instance, in the case of counters, in which LaTeX itself defines the macro and uses a specific prefix for it. For instance, if you define a counter called myItems, LaTeX will actually create a macro named backslash C at myItems. Okay, so in that case, using a specific postfix is not necessary. You won't ever have a conflict with that name in your package, I mean. From the companion, I'm not going to repeat those, because those are conventions that I'm obviously following. These are generally admitted conventions, so I would be a fool to go against them. And please stop the at madness, for tech's sake, right? These examples come from the LaTeX kernel itself. They don't make any sense, right? Especially this one, file fun, okay? Could have been called at file, at found in all letters, you know? All those, I know it's fun to use at characters all over the place. I've been there, I've done that, right? But it makes your code completely unreadable. So please don't do that, okay? So a couple of examples. Those ones, generally admitted conventions, okay? Mixed uppercase for extension macros and normal downcase macro names for the traditional API for your package. My way of using the at character is only to use at as a prefix for internal commands, and that's all, okay? So if I have a macro corresponding to an internal macro, then it's going to be prefixed with an at, and that's it. Sometimes it goes even deeper than one level of sub-macros. So several, for instance, this macro is implement fx note is implemented in terms of fx s note, which is internal, so it's prefixed with an at. But it also needs another sub macro, so level two of macro nesting, which then I will call at fx note, fx s note. Okay, so I'm willing to stick several at to indicate the level of nesting that I have in my implementation of the top level macro. As far as I'm aware of, I've gone up to four prefixed at characters, but not more than that. And also another use for prefixes that I have is to write macros in some kind of polymorphic way, but I'm going to get back to this in a little while. So for instance, this macro is actually a virtual one in the object-oriented sense, because the actual definitions are different for draft and final mode. So in that case, I will postfix the macro name with at draft and at final in order to make a proper distinction. So these were a couple of examples. And of course, there are a couple of exceptions on which you can't redo anything. For instance, conforming to standards. I'm not going to define a conditional called my if condition, because every conditional in the LaTeX world is called backslash if something. Okay, so I'm not going to go against that rule. Obviously, in the fixme package, I don't have an fx list macro. I have a list of fixmes macro, because you know there's list of figures, list of tables. I'm not going to go against that. Sometimes you are also forced to create exceptions to your rules. For instance, manually, if you want to support the contents line LaTeX facility, then you need to write a macro which is called l at fixme in that case, and there is nothing you can do about that. And sometimes LaTeX itself will break your own rules, but it's not such a big deal. Okay, for instance, the counter prefix is not the prefix that I'm using, but that's okay. And also something quite arguable in LaTeX is the way to define environments by using a macro named myenv and then end myenv. I would have preferred that the first one be called begin myenv, because as it happens in fixme, I have a macro fx note which corresponds to an environment. And so I cannot have both an environment called fxnote and a macro called fxnote. So the thing I do, which I think is kind of nice, is called the equivalent environment and fxnote. Because when you read this, you just read plain English, you know, begin and fxnote, and an FX node. So that's kind of nice. Okay, leveled. How am I doing as far as time is concerned?
30 seconds before the 5 minute.
Oh, holy great mother of tech. Okay, a level two design. What am I gonna do? Okay, I'm gonna skip that one completely because I think behavior here and social behavior is more interesting. So I'm gonna skip this section. I'm sorry. In terms of behavior, what I was thinking about is, you know, package interaction, intercession, and also providing nice user interfaces for the people using your packages. So I have a couple of things about that. First one, rule number one, which is almost obvious, be nice to your users, okay? So this means document your packages properly. There is a difference between documenting a package and documenting a package properly, okay? If you want to see an example, please turn off the cameras. I'm going to show you the documentation of the KV options package. So suppose I'm new to this whole KeyVal option processing stuff. I want to learn how it works. Okay, that's actually my own personal story. Somebody recommended KV options, so I went to the documentation and read. This package is for writers that want to allow their users to specify options as key value pairs. Example given: document class blah blah blah, use package blah blah blah. But wait a minute, I want key value arguments for macros as well. So isn't this package able to do so? Nowhere is it printed in the manual. So it's far from obvious, you know. So the and this is just one example amongst millions. Okay, the key problem when documenting a package properly is to put yourself in the position of the reader. Okay, as a teacher, I can tell you that this is a quite difficult exercise. But in some way, I also think that it's fun to do. Properly documenting a package, being successful as thinking in the terms of the users who don't know what you are going to talk about, is something both difficult and also rewarding when you are successful. Okay, so please document your packages properly. Be backward compatible. This is also quite obvious. If for some reason, and this happened to me already, I really want to be not backward compatible for the greater good because the package turns out to be unmaintainable, something that I do is create a new package with a name postfixed with a version number. So it's very likely that in the near future there's going to be a curve 2 package because I want to get rid of different ugly things in the original curve 1. And since this is going to be backward incompatible, I don't want to mess up with the people using curve 1. Okay. In the case of FixMe, for instance, this is a package that's mostly used during the development phase of the document and that you're not supposed to use when it's in final mode. So in that case, I would be maybe more laxist in terms of backward compatibility. Use key value interfaces. Okay. I believe this is already native in LaTeX 3. Yeah. So I think key value interfaces are a crucial component in providing good quality user interfaces. And just to give you an example, it's with the XKeyVal option package, it's extremely easy to provide a key value interface for at the class level or at the package level, let's say, providing a setup command which allow you to redefine options in any time you wish, and also providing a key value interface for at the macro level. It's just a matter of adding one line of code once you get used to the XKeyVal interface. Okay, so that's easy. Rule number two, be nice to your hackers. Being nice to the hackers means organizing your code in such a way that when people are going to read your code, they will understand what you're talking about. And the things that I do these days are actually to be bottom up, which means that when I'm writing a piece of code, it only depends on the things that I've previously written upper level in the same file. Okay, and the second thing is that I'm organizing the code by feature. What I mean by feature is that I think it would be a mistake, for instance, to group all things that have to do with internationalization. Because internationalization is not a feature, and it's not a feature of your package in itself, it's an implementation detail. So if I have, for instance, environments, table of contents, and things like that, which needs to be internationalized, I will spread the internationalization macros all over the place in the file in order to group the features by themselves in an atomic way. Okay, because when I read somebody else's code, I might be interested in one specific functionality, and I want to see that functionality completely implemented sequentially in an atomic block in the source code. I had examples of that, but that's too bad. I can't make it in time. I can't make it in time for that either. So please read the slides. I apologize. It's way too long. Social behavior. Let me just give you a story. At some point, a guy named Martin Schraurer wrote a package called Curfile, I think it's called, and it's a package implementing that allows you to keep track of the file name currently being processed. Okay, and he talked to me by email because I had such a package already, which is called Fink, and he wanted to establish a compatibility mode between both our packages. So I replied gently, "Here's what you need to do," blah 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 blah. And at the same time, I thought, "What the hell is wrong with this guy? He's actually re-implementing something that I've already written, and he's aware of it." Because he's asking me for, you know, implementing a compatibility between both package, you know? What the WTF? Okay, so I replied nicely, blah, blah, blah. After some time, I figure out that his package is actually more powerful than mine, so I deprecated Fink in favor of his one. And then, 1 year and 38 weeks later, I discovered that he already had sent me emails with patches for Fink in order to make it more powerful, and I had completely forgotten about it. Okay, so the lesson to be learned here is be reactive, and if you're unable to be reactive, then open your development. I mean, put your stuff on GitHub and trust people. Okay, be collaborative. That's the social lesson that I probably have learned the very hard way. Okay. So, conclusion, coding style is important. Sticking to it is actually even more important. Keep it in mind permanently when you write code, because your coding style is also subject to evolvement, and of course, no rule without exception, okay? Perspective, where's this book? Well, it turns out that I would be willing to write such a book if there's any interest, although I'm not sure if anybody would be interested in reading this, let alone publishing it, but maybe the article that I'm going to write about this topic could serve as a basis for writing an elements of LaTeX programming style. And if this book ever comes to birth, then I think we will be able to say that LaTeX or tech is more relevant than ever. Thank you.
Okay, we have a couple minutes for short questions. I hope they're short.
I mean, there are a bunch of C code beautifiers. Are you willing to go to the task and get down to a LaTeX code beautifier?
No way. I prefer that people do it manually. It's already hard enough to get proper editor support. So let alone manipulating text code and reforming it, I think it would be an extremely hard task.
I mean, my point is not a joke.
I understood,
C,
yeah.
Lots of the C standard style has been inflicted on people by showing through the beautifiers.
Yeah, it's true. I think it's extremely difficult to do in LaTeX because, you know, expand after stuff like that, conditionals that are not properly nested because the closing of the condition is going to be expanded by another macro, and things like that are impossible to indent unless probably you run LaTeX itself to see what the results are. So I think this is extremely complicated.
I agree with you. I mean, the problems are even much bigger than that. You know, sometimes you receive a paper from a publication by a couple of authors where one author wrote part, another one who wrote the second part.
Yeah.
One used data for the first part, and the other one used Spark data for the second part.
Yeah, exactly. Sure.
At the beginning, you introduced some goals, like how to improve the quality of the packages, the compatibility, no conflicts, and so on. So, in my opinion, this is one great step to reach this goal. Another would be to describe some design patterns.
I have a couple of design patterns here.
Yeah, good. Yeah, because I think that should be explicitly mentioned.
Yeah, this is question time, so I guess I'm allowed to show one slide.
Right. Okay, perfect.
Thank you. Can I show two slides, please? Okay. First one, modularity. This is a macro taken from SplitBib. It's 200 lines long, okay? I know the guy, by the way, he works next to my office. I'm gonna beat the crap out of him when I come back to France. I need, in the curf class, I need to grab this whole macro just to modify the lines that are in green in order to support. In order to support SplitBib in curve, you know, this is a nightmare. So write small code. And then I was talking about intercession. And so the things that I wanted to say are that the current tools that we have in order to handle conflict management and things like that are not satisfactory for the reasons mentioned here. And I think in that respect that file hook written by Martin Schwarer, which is also the author of Curvefile, by the way, is a crucial component in properly handling intercession, because file hook allows you to plug behavior before a file is loaded and after a file is loaded without even knowing if it's actually going to be loaded at any point during the preamble. Okay, so by using preambles and postambles around style files, you can actually think in a stack-oriented basis. Okay, I can show you some code in Curve. Right now I'm doing intercession this way, and the code is much simpler than it used to be before. And I dare everyone to reproduce the logic that I have right now with only the standard tools. Okay, we can talk about that at the lunch break.
Yeah, look, some of your examples with the indentation and the breaking up into lines, that's highly problematic. Because every time you open a brace there, if you don't have a percent after it, you're going to introduce new spaces. And these are some of the most difficult things to debug in any kind of tech programming.
These are probably the points which are the most subject to personal taste. And I agree with you that these are not the most important problems. However, I still have a tendency to think that when it comes to reading code that you didn't write yourself, a lack of readability can really hurt.
Okay. Yeah, if it produces the wrong results in the output.
Sorry, come again?
If it produces the wrong results in the output, you have to make your code actually get the right results.
Well, it's not a question of producing the correct output. It's a question of, for instance, I have this conditional that's starting here. Where the hell does it end? You know. And that's an indentation and spacing problem. And it affects readability. And I don't like to spend 10 minutes figuring out where is the backslash phi corresponding to what backslash if.
I mean, if you've actually put something that's going to end up on the page when you didn't want it there, you've created a problem.
Okay. So I guess we agree to disagree.
It's not a question, actually. I just want to say that it's been a very relevant and learning presentation, at least for me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.